Sometimes the only way to tell the truth is through fiction. In the days after Iran's 2009 elections, thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators took to the streets. The government cracked down, and many of those protesters disappeared, some of them forever. Journalists and human rights advocates who tried to investigate also came under attack, and some also mysteriously vanished. Now, two young writers tell the story in the form of a graphic novel called Zahra's Paradise. For political reasons, the authors use pseudonyms. This is how Amir describes the story.
Zahra's Paradise begins after the demonstrations, and it's the story of a protester named Mehdi who's gone into the streets along with millions of other young Iranians to protest. And as you recall, what sort of moved those protests was the chant of, "Where is my vote?" And he vanishes. He doesn't come back home. And so the story is that of Mehdi's mother, Zahra, who has to basically go right in the immediate aftermath of the protests to the hospitals, and from there to the morgue and the revolutionary courts to see where her son might be. So part of it is a journey through a bureaucracy, a Kafkaesque bureaucracy. And part of it is the story of the resilience of the Iranian people, the resilience of a mother who does not abandon her son. And as you know, of course, in Iran, the women's movement is astonishingly powerful. And so, in a way, it's also a way for us who are outside to honor them.
Is there a little bit that you could read for us from near the beginning to kind of set the stage?
With pleasure. This is the second chapter of Zahra's Paradise. It's called Aftermath. And it begins with Zahra and her son, who's Hassan, who's a blogger, standing outside Evin prison. Many of the families of Iranian prisoners would go and stand outside of Evin prison and chant Allahu Akbar as a way of making sure that people inside know that there are people outside who are witnessing them. So this is where the story begins. Here we are at Evin again, searching for Mehdi. There's no end to the waiting. Finally, a door opens. An insider appears. Big shot. Two bodyguards. Mother approaches him. "Sir, sir, one moment, please. Can you help me? My son, Mehdi." Zahra shows him the photograph of Mehdi. "Have you seen him?" Mr. Bodyguard looks annoyed. "Hey, no filming around the prison. Turn that off. Now." "I've been looking for him everywhere. I haven't heard anything from him. For days. He's only 19. He was supposed to take his entrance exams." "Nope." "You haven't seen him inside?" "Mehdi Alavi?" "No, ma'am." "Any students his age? Anyone called Mehdi?" "Sorry, ma'am. I can't help you." "He's never been away this long. Never. They say he must be here. I have no one else to turn to. You can help me find him." "When did you last see him?" "At the protests. I think he was marching towards Freedom Square."
"Freedom Square?"
June 15th, 2009. 3 million peoples were in the streets, a torrent that could have swept everything in its wake. A few days later, were dismissed as dust and dirt, a scorched riverbed.
It's astonishing how clear it becomes. You can hear. I have in my mind, of course, the image that you presented with the graphic novel of this man who doesn't care. But it's live, and it sounds as though it's quite live for you writing it.
It is, you know, it's been alive for, I think, not just me, but for literally all the Iranian people for the past 30 years at least. And the reason it's live is that, you know, there's life in Evin prison. And as long as that's the case, you know, you just can't let go of what's going on there. When the American hikers were released from Iran's prisons recently after a 2-year stay in Evin prison, it was just gorgeous, you know, seeing them reunited with their families, seeing the American mothers, what they went through and what they did to get their sons back. $1 million was paid by the, you know, Emir of Oman to release them. And as an American, I watch it and it's just thrilling. The other side of me, my Iranian side, watches it. And I was reading what they were saying, and they were talking about the echoes that they would hear in Evin prison, the echo of the screams, the echo of the torture. And you wonder who's left behind, you know. When Nelson Mandela was in Robben Island in prison, and, you know, he's the world's foremost political prisoner, He would say that the most important thing to him while he was in prison was knowing that people outside weren't abandoning him. And not just in terms of saving his life, but in terms of honoring the reasons for which he was in prison. And really, the Nelson Mandelas of Iran are in Evin prison right now. There's a young man, Majid Tavakkoli, a student leader who's in there. Ayatollah Burujerdi, extraordinary religious figure, is in there. A lot of the leading women's rights activists are in there. I mean, how can one let go of the people who are guarding the promise of Iran?
And of course, the worst thing is you don't know whether your loved one is there or not.
Oh, absolutely. That's the other side of it. And thank you very much for bringing it up. There are countless stories of people who suddenly vanish and then their corpse is flung out of a car into a desert. You don't know if your loved one is in Evin prison, in Kahrizak prison. You don't know who has arrested them. You don't know why they've arrested them. I mean, it's an atrocity. It became such an embarrassment. A doctor at Kahrizak named Ramin Puran Danjani, what they would do is that prisoners who were killed, you know, they come up with a form and they say everybody's dying there of meningitis. And he refused to sign these forms, a prison doctor. A very, very brave thing. And then he went before parliament to really say what happened to these people. A few days later, he died under very, very dubious and questionable conditions. So they're also, you know, this is now a pattern. This is now a pattern. I mean, Zahra Kazemi, the Canadian photojournalist who was killed in Iran, she was just taking pictures outside Evin prison, pictures of families who were gathering outside Evin prison. She goes in the prison, comes out in a coma, terribly violated in that prison. I mean, broken toes, broken nose, just horrific. Again, this went to the Iranian parliament, under pressure from the Canadian government, under pressure from Penn, journalistic groups everywhere, human rights groups. It became a major case. The guy who was responsible for killing her remains at loose. He's a fellow named Mortazavi. Basically, they just temporarily demoted him and then made him Iran's drug czar. So this is what we're dealing with.
It's overwhelming in a way, but part of what you have done in Zahra's Paradise is to find things that aren't as overwhelming, but that still give you hope. One of the parts of the story that I like, I think, is that there are moments of kindness. There are the people who refuse to help, but they're quite ordinary people who do help.
Yeah.
It's clear that Iran still exists, I guess, is what you're saying.
Don't forget, 3 million people poured out into the streets of Iran, did it with dignity, did it with grace, did it with conviction. And that doesn't come out of nowhere. I mean, you know, Iran is the land of Hafiz. It's the land of Rumi. It's the land of love. It's the land of life. I mean, that's what it's always been. And those sort of great poets, their teachings are etched in the heart of the Iranian people. I mean, there is a dimension to the Persian language, really, that makes that language a cathedral of love, if you ask me. If we are the heirs, truly, of the Hafizes and the Rumis and the Khayyams that are such a big part of Iran, if we're going to claim their words, you know, we must also claim the bricks of Evin prison as our own and what's going on behind that as our own. We can't have this split identity between this sort of these two Irans. One of these Irans is going to have to prevail.
Is it hard for you being so far away from it? You left Iran when you were fairly young, is that right?
Yeah, I left when I was 12.
So where did you go to capture the feeling of the place in the here and now and to draw and write its people so intimately?
I kind of was forced to leave Iran fairly quickly. And I think sometimes when you're forced to leave something that you really love, you hold on to it. You hold on to the memories. You hold on to the feelings, the people. And of course, in America, you know, we have millions of Iranians in America. We go back and forth to Iran. We have, you know, relatives and friends all over the place. So the Iranian diaspora is very closely connected to the people in Iran. And a lot of these characters are actually characters that you read about, you know, that emerged in the blogosphere. I mean, they were there, they were alive, they were doing things, they had tremendous agency.
Now, the story as you've written it takes place in 2009, which is before the Arab Spring uprisings. Have those changed? Would it be a different story if you were to tell it now?
You know, when we started this project, it was an Iranian project. And then as we were moving forward, the Arab Spring was coming along. And it was very hard not to miss the connection between what was going on in Iran and what was going on in Tunisia and Egypt and now in Syria. And I've got, you know, I'm sure this will go back to Iran. Because it's clear that all, you know, and beyond Iran and beyond the Arab world, I mean, there's a kind of global spring going on. There's this, everywhere we see the young beginning to assert themselves, from Chile to Greece, you know, even to Wall Street these days. So this sort of tradition of protest that was sort of quiet is once again stirring in the world. Mm. And, you know, hopefully one can direct it not towards violence and destruction, but towards community and creation.
You know, I have to ask you why you decided to do this as a graphic novel.
Khalil is the artist, and seeing his talent was what gave me the confidence to move forward with this graphic novel. But the form is actually brilliant, because say when you're making documentary film, which is what I've done before, you have to constantly lug a camera, the sound has to be right, your timing has to be impeccable, the light has to be right, and it's very expensive. With a graphic novel, really all you need to recreate the streets of Tehran is a pencil. It's the ultimate democratic form, in a sense. We actually wrote this novel, this graphic novel, in real time, publishing it on the web, and then it would get translated into however many languages, 12 languages or so. So it wasn't just that it was the graphic novel. It was the graphic novel plus internet. And that was just, that was an exhilarating experience.
Amir is the pseudonym of an Iranian-American journalist and human rights activist. He's the author of the graphic novel Zahra's Paradise. The artist, who also chose to remain anonymous, calls himself Khalil.